This podcast is brought to you by BetRivers. Download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Must be 21. Available in Ohio only. Void where prohibited. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports gaming is provided in partnership with Dayton Real Estate Ventures, LLC, DBA, Hollywood Gaming at Dayton Raceway.
You're listening to Betting Weekly La Liga on the BetRivers Network.
Well, hello and welcome to the Betting Weekly La Liga podcast brought to you in association with BetRivers, your hometown sportsbook. You're with Dan Roebuck alongside me, Alan Feely, the editor of Football España, and Rory Barlow, football writer at Football España and La Liga Lowdown, ahead of the new campaign getting underway. A season preview, all the best bets and advice for your futures wagers. Well, La Liga didn't get to announce Mbappe, as we thought that they might do over the summer. But we have got Alan and Rory back. The big talking point, of course, guys, is Barcelona, because from a betting point of view, they make the market. If whatever happens off the pitch affects them, then it will affect the prices. So if they can't register players for the weekend or for the Champions League or whatever, it's going to affect the prices. So first of all, we've got to get your guys' opinions on what the end game is for Barcelona when it comes to their season getting underway as it should do. Alan, you first.
Well, I think there's been a lot of rhetoric around Barcelona's off-field situation this summer, but I think that no matter what, and no matter what considerations, when we're talking about ethical concerns or moral concerns or legal concerns, there's no doubting that they put together a very competitive and very compelling and very intelligent team. So I think that no matter what the off-field circus is dictating and is, you know, evoking discussion, I think that no matter what, Barcelona are going to have a very competitive sporting team, because I think the team is very separate to the club, if that makes sense. And I think that while they are struggling at the moment to get those final signatures over the line in terms of registering them in time for La Liga to begin, I'm pretty confident that whether it's by making a big sale or by activating that fourth lever, that Barcelona will get them over the line and will be able to register all of the summer signings to be able to begin the new season at a full-strength squad.
Rory?
Yeah, I'd have to say something similar. I think that's almost Xavi's biggest job at the start of the season, is ensuring that the off-field stuff does not spill over into the dressing room. But I think if you look at Frenkie de Jong's performance, who, of course, is at the eye of the storm, he's probably the person under the most pressure, under the most scrutiny, one way or another, rightly or wrongly. And if you look at his performance in the Joan Gamper sort of friendly, the opening ceremony of Barcelona's season, if you like, he was absolutely fantastic in the 45 minutes that he played. So based on that, you have to say that the players so far seem to be able to block it out. And I think Barcelona, for all of their off-field struggles, and there's a lot of debate about it, and there's a lot that you can sort of have a go at Joan Laporta for if you want to, but the players themselves, they seem pretty focused.
Because when you look at it, and we're talking about the outright market here, Real Madrid are favourites, plus 125, Barcelona plus 130, Atleti plus 600, Sevilla plus 2500. The market makers are almost buying into, Rory, what's being said on social media, what all the newspapers, because it's doom and gloom. They can't register Lewandowski and so on and so forth. It's as if they're going to have a huge handicap. The market's factoring that in maybe too much, do you think?
I think to a degree. I mean, there is the flip side of that argument where you can say, if you look at Real Madrid's summer and everything they've done, they've had two big signings, Rudiger and Tchouaméni, and they've come in sort of very early and everything's very stable there. Whereas if you do look at Barcelona, it is unstable to a degree. I think it helps that there's a narrative of doom and gloom around Barcelona. A lot of people, rightly or wrongly, expected Barcelona to have to sort of sit and wait out this financial crisis for several years and that they wouldn't be competing. And some people, it's certainly a narrative that sells well to have Barcelona are these crooks, the things they are doing they shouldn't be allowed to do. And I think it's a beneficial media narrative to sell that. I think people like that. And it's one of the narratives, and there's certainly some credence to it. I'm not saying it's all one-sided and it's not a media invention, so to speak, but I don't think it's as large on the field as it should be, as it's being portrayed, so to speak.
Let's get your thoughts on the top four in the market when it comes to the outrights. I've squeezed Sevilla in there, but it's a three-horse race. It might even be a two-horse race, really, mightn't it? Alan, Real Madrid are plus 125 for the title. They're the champions, shortest price that they've been since the 14-15 season when they only finished second. They, of course, won the Champions League as well. Do they deserve to be title favourites? They seem to have bought well as well. What's your thoughts on Real?
Well, Real Madrid have retained the title once in 32 years. That's quite a surprising stat.
Lovely stat. Lovely stat.
They care about the Champions League above all else. This is a club that prides itself on having 14 Champions League trophies in the picture when they sign a new player. That's what they define themselves as, not La Liga. And that's why they historically don't have a good record of retaining La Liga titles. Similarly, Carlo Ancelotti, for all his successes, and there are many, also has a bad record in winning league titles comparatively to the rest of his career. Like he's won titles in five major European nations, but he's never won multiple titles in the kind of a dynastic fashion, and that definitely holds against them. Similarly, I think the defensive situation is a bit up in the air. I mean, Rory mentioned they brought in Antonio Rudiger from Chelsea. I think he's an excellent signing. He's a really top class centre back, very competitive, very aggressive, very charismatic figure in many ways. But there's a question mark now in how he fits into the system, because in pre-season playing left back. And Carlo Ancelotti has been on the record as talking about wanting to maintain the centre-back partnership of last season of Eder Militao and David Alaba, which on paper is a very well-balanced defensive partnership. Many people speculated that Alaba would go to left-back and Rudiger would come into the middle, or Rudiger would step up in place of Militao, but all signs at the moment point to that being the case. Would you play Eintracht Frankfurt in the European Super Cup final tomorrow evening in Helsinki in Finland, and all signs point to Ancelotti starting Alaba and Militao in the preferred centre-back partnership position. I think that while Rudiger is an excellent signing, his arrival kind of casts a bit of doubt in terms of their defensive stability and kind of consistency. Similarly, they only have one proper striker on their books in Karim Benzema. And obviously, he's probably the best striker in the world, but if he gets injured or loses form and he's 34 years of age, they have a serious problem because they have nobody to alternate him with. At the moment, the second striker is Eden Hazard, who he playing as a false nine. So while Madrid are very strong and deserve to be absolutely, you know, considered serious contenders to retain both La Liga and the Champions League, there are flaws in their squad and there isn't the same sense of progression and momentum that is around Barcelona. So while they're definitely in the conversation, they're definitely, you know, up there, I think to say that they're outright favourites is a bit optimistic in my opinion.
So false favourites, Rory, according to Alan, do you go along with that?
I don't necessarily think it's false. I think that would maybe even be too strong. But there's certainly an element of doubt there for me. I mean, Alan mentioned Carlo Ancelotti's sort of, Real Madrid's stat of retaining league titles. And if you look at Carlo Ancelotti's history as well, the only title that he's ever retained is, I think it's the German Super Cup. That's the only successive title he's won, which, to say the least,
it's incredible, really.
Yeah, given how much success he's had and how much he's won, it's really quite a stark record. And before this, the league titles thing was a stick to beat Ancelotti with. He sort of proved people wrong last season. But I do think that things really fell for Real Madrid in many ways. I mean, they had the Champions League, yes, and that run was incredible. And I'm not trying to wrestle credit away from Real Madrid. But in terms of injuries, Karim Benzema was out for a couple of weeks in February or so. He missed some not-so-key games. He stayed very fit. Vinicius stayed very fit. Luka Modric was able to sort of, and they should be more rested this season, but Modric, Kroos, Casemiro, they were all fit for the major games. And so if you look at Real Madrid's season, they didn't really have like a La Liga challenge. I mean, we're talking in February about whether Barcelona and Atletico Madrid might miss out on the Champions League. So to come off that sort of league title win and come into the competition, I think Atleti will be better. But I think Barcelona will obviously be a lot better. To come into that competition, I think it's going to be a different challenge for Real Madrid this season. And as we've seen consistently, it's always harder to win right after you've just won.
Well, that certainly seems to be the case with the stats that you've come out with there, both of you. So it sounds as if Barcelona is going to be a selection. I was going to wait to get the tips, but come on, make the case for Barcelona. Rory, you're first up, because bettors want to know here. Their second favourite is plus 130 at the moment. If all these signings make the pitch at the weekend or the second weekend of the season, obviously they're going to be shorter. You make the case for Barca first, and then I'll let Alan have a go.
Well, I think you can make an argument for Barcelona not winning the Champions League this season. That's totally fair. But if you want to talk about La Liga and the things that help you to win La Liga are being consistent week in, week out. And in particular, again, in La Liga, you're going to have to deal with a lot of sides that are going to sit deep, that are going to really test you in terms of how you can break them down, how you can sort of switch things up to make them confused. Well, Barcelona, they have six very good forwards, seventh if you include Memphis Depay, if he sticks around. So you have six different options that you can bring on, rotate. They can be fresh. You can literally send on Ousmane Dembélé for 30 minutes just to really give it to the fullback that he's against. And that, I think, is a weapon that Real Madrid really don't have. They just don't have that attacking depth. They might be able to control games better. But when it comes to breaking teams down, Vinicius and Benzema are very much the tandem that's key for them. Right now, Barcelona, if everything works, they don't have an over-reliance on Lewandowski. They don't have an over-reliance on Ousmane Dembélé or Pedri, as it might seem, as it was last season. They have so many options that I think on a week-to-week basis, the depth is just too much for the other teams, in my view.
Alan?
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, if you look at Barcelona last season, they finished 13 points behind Real Madrid, obviously a chasm. Even considering that Real Madrid basically rested their first teamers for the last four games of the season because they already won the league title and they were preparing for the Champions League final. But if you look at La Liga, since Xavi took over at Barcelona at the beginning of November, they only finished 5 points behind Real Madrid. So it's not as big a gap as you'd imagine. And to that team that finished 5 points behind Real Madrid, they've added Jules Koundé, probably, in my opinion, the best young centre-back in European football with a decade at the elite ahead of him. Excellent ball player, an astute defender, really good footballer with a killer mentality. You've also brought Andreas Christensen, who's the key part of the Champions League winning team at Chelsea season four last. Again, a young player, 25 years of age, Danish international, good footballer. Frank Kessie, who just was an integral part of the AC Milan team that won the first Scudetto in 10 years, or 11 years, should I say. Also, you know, Pablo Torre, youngster from Racing Santander, very promising guy, he's doing well in pre-season. Robert Lewandowski, the best striker in European football across the last decade, has scored plus 40 goals every year for the last 7 years running. He's going to come in and score 30 goals at least, and have 30 goals to the Barcelona team that haven't had a goal scorer of that caliber since Lionel Messi left last summer. I mean, Memphis Depay was your top scorer last season in conjunction with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, and they got 13 each. So it's a serious upgrade there. Rafinha, who's somebody who I really like, and not just because of his technical ability, because I think that if you were to compare him with Ousmane Dembele, who's his positional peer, Dembele's a superior player. But what Rafinha has, what Dembele doesn't have, is that he's from Porto Alegre in Brazil, and he grew up playing in, you know, hard scrabble street games in one of the toughest ghettos in the whole country. And he's a very tough, very competitive guy. So if you have him and Dembele jousting for the same position, and having two quality players in each position is what Xavi Hernandez has built his squad planning around. Then you're going to have a seriously competitive atmosphere where you have two players who will be playing out of the skin to maintain their places in the team. Also, you have Pedri, who hopefully remains fit for the whole season, one of the best midfielders in European football. You have Gavi, who has just turned 18 and is still one of the best young players in European football. You have Ansu Fati, who hopefully will maintain fitness this season and perform at a consistent level that we haven't seen from since he came into the first team. You have Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who's still a very good striker. You have Ferran Torres, who's a very good striker, who's going to perform well this season, I would imagine, after, you know, settling in the winter period last year. And you have other players like, you know, Jordi Alba, Gerard Piqué, Marc-André Ter Stegen, you know, Serginho Dest, you know, good footballers. So I think that if you look at the squad as a balanced basis, it's really quite strong. I think that they've been playing with an illusion, as I say in Spain, that's unmatched at the moment. Because if you talk about Joan Laporta, when he came into the club in 2003, he talked about a virtuous cycle where the core of the team is based around young players and La Masia and Mezclan Club, Barcelona in this. But that needs to be triggered by success in the short term. So that's why they went inside Ronaldinho. That's why they went inside, you know, players that are ilk. And that's why they've done the same this transfer window. Because if you look at the Barcelona's average attendance in Camp Nou last season was in the 50,000s. On Sunday evening, when they played Mexican side Pumas and Joan Gamper, as Rory alluded to earlier, they had over 80,000 in their seats. So, like, if you talk about getting bums on seats, getting people excited about the club, and creating an us-against-them mentality as well, because all the media and every neutral hates Barcelona right now and wants them to fail. then you've a recipe for a kind of an us against the world mentality, both from the club, the supporters base, and also from the squad, because Xavi, despite all the off-field problems, has managed to control the squad in that sense in a very intelligent fashion. He's kept everybody on side, whether it's Samuel Umtiti, Martin Braithwaite, or Frankie Dion, and Memphis Depay as well. So for that reason, I would be very optimistic about Arsenal's chances of retaining La Liga, although they are certainly an unknown quantity.
Well, I think you convinced me. +130, we are all in on Barcelona when it comes to the La Liga title. Let's just get briefly on Atleti and maybe a word on Sevilla, or maybe we can save that for a top four chat. Atleti, are they just going to come third, Rory? Do you think, is it as simple as that? Without the big two, -200 if you want to do that, they're not as good as Barcelona and Real Madrid, but better than the rest. The market frames it that way.
Yeah, I do think they'll hang around a bit longer than some expect them to, because I think last season, in the same way that a lot of things fell right for Real Madrid, pretty much everything went wrong for Atleti. They had a horrible season last season, and they just managed to pull it around. But I think there's reasons to be excited. I think Axel Witsel, he's one of their two key additions in midfield. I think he provides a lot more strength and a lot more grit than the rest of the midfielders do at Atleti right now. I think if you look at Nahuel Molina, who's the right back who will come in, what he does is he allows Marcos Llorente to move back into midfield. And as Sid Lowe recently remarked, he was maybe the best midfielder in La Liga two seasons ago. So taking him out of his position, playing him at right back, playing as a right wing back, that was a big miss for them last season. And if he moves back in, Nahuel Molina can come in, and he's very good going forward. So if you're playing three at the back, as Simeone will, I think that will really allow them to sort of just play more naturally next season or this season. I think they'll have a lot more confidence in what they're doing. But there is still the backline issue. Enrique Cerezo, who's the CEO of Atleti, came out a few weeks ago and said, that's our squad business done. And I, like many colchoneros out there, my head was exploding, because they have five centre-backs for three roles. And two of them, well, one of them was pretty poor last season, to say the least, in Mario Hermoso. And the other one was not only poor, but also unreliable in terms of fitness, and that's Felipe. So yeah, that's their big hole. And I think in terms of a title race, that undoes them for me. I don't think you can count them into it for that. But I think it's not without the realms of possibility that if Real Madrid have a bad season, they could finish second. But for my money, they've got to finish third.
-200, betting without. Do you want a brief thought, Alan, on Atleti quickly?
And the biggest thing for Atletico is that they're not going into the season as defending champions with lots of expectation on their shoulders. They're coming in as kind of, you know, chasing the pack rather than leading the pack. And that suits Diego Simeone's mentality, and it suits the club's mentality as well. So while, yeah, on paper, they haven't got stronger really, aside from a couple of clever additions, and Witsel can also play centre-back maybe, Molina does balance the team a bit more in terms of, you know, as Rory said, getting Llorente back in his favourite position, getting an outlet in the right side. I think that title race is definitely far from the season. I don't think they'll have what it takes to challenge the big two, but I think that they'll be comfortably ahead of the fourth place team, and the chasing pack is going for the final Champions League spot. So while I think that Atletico aren't going to win La Liga this season, I think they'll be better than last season. I think that they could do something in Europe potentially, and I think that they'll surprise a lot of people this year. They'll be strong this season. I think they won't be as the crisis club of 2021-22.
Best of the rest. When it comes to fourth spot, we were going to talk about Sevilla, but we're going to rattle through some more markets here. Top four betting looks like this on the BetRivers site. Sevilla are +125, Villarreal +200, La Real +350, Real Betis +400, Athletic Club +500. Now, you both picked different here when it comes to fourth place. You haven't gone for Sevilla. And I'll let you go first, because yours is the bigger price here. Who do you like? Because we are going to go Barca, Real Madrid and Atleti. Who do you like for fourth? Tell us why.
I think Real Betis, because, Real Sociedad, Villarreal every year are tipped as being the team who are going to upset the hegemony that's built up in the last three seasons and supplant Sevilla as the fourth best club in Spain. And they failed every year. Real Sociedad are a really good football team, but they're quite green. They lack the grizzly characters that Sevilla have, and they have never shown the ability to consistently perform across the 38-game league season. Similarly, Villarreal have a really good squad. They finished seventh two seasons in a row, and they've underperformed in La Liga, and that's because, for my money, in Unai Emery, they have a coach who's better suited to one-off Europa League, Champions League knockout ties than, you know, consistently performing over a league season. And for that reason, I don't think they have what it takes to push on and crack into the top four. But Real Betis are in a really good moment. They won the Copa del Rey last season, so there's a real positivity and levity around the club at the moment. I spent last season in Seville, so I know firsthand just how important it was for them to win the Copa del Rey, and also how liberating it was for them to win the Copa del Rey, the first title since 2005. Emmanuel Pellegrini, they're one of the best coaches in European football, most experienced coaches in European football. Their current squad is a lovely blend of experienced players, players in the prime of their careers, players in the beginning of their careers. It really is well balanced, and also the way they approach the game is well balanced in terms of the simplicity of it, because they can be solid defensively, but they can also play attractive football. They have attacking flair, but they also have players like, you know, Guido Rodriguez and that like, who are very solid and resolute defensively. Similarly, the likes of Alex Moreno turning down, you know, a big money move to the Premier League with Nottingham Forest to stay at Real Betis quite recently, kind of, you know, bucking the current trend that we're seeing across not just La Liga but also European football. And today, just this afternoon, we've seen the Hector Bellerin's agents around London having talks at Arsenal about, you know, completing a move back to Real Betis because he's so determined to return there after what he lived there on loan last season. So I think that for a multitude of factors, for, you know, for good vibrations, for, you know, football incompetence, for experience, for past performance, because they finished fifth last season and won a trophy, I think that Real Betis is the best place of the chasing pack to supplant Sevilla, who are looking like they're at the end of the cycle and not in a very good moment.
Plus 400 for Real Betis, incidentally, if you want to back them for top four, doesn't have to be fourth, can be anywhere in the top four. Rory, you've gone elsewhere.
I have indeed, and I love Manuel Pellegrini. I really do, and it pains me to say that I have them fifth, because I think what Pellegrini's done there has been fantastic, but I do think he's overachieved with what he's got in terms of resources for two seasons in a row. And I think it's very difficult to keep that up and to even push further in that direction without serious investment, which is not something that Betis will have. Unai Emery, it goes against all of my heart to back him in the league, because I do agree
with
that.
Always your head rather than your heart when it comes to gambling. You should know this by right now, Rory.
it goes against everything to back Unai Emery in the league, because I do agree with Alan that he's better suited to cup competitions. But the defining factors that I've looked at and seen that Villarreal have an edge is Gerard Moreno, if he is fit, is the best striker outside of that top three. And if you pair him with Arnaut Danjuma, then I think the two of them can really make a pretty significant duo. The two both had fitness issues at various points last season. They never really had the chance to play together. And I think Villarreal, they'll bring in Gio Lo Celso, I think, in the coming days, in the coming weeks. And I think strength for squad-wise, pair that with those two. Pair that with the fact that Unai Emery, I think he knows it's boom or bust. I think if he doesn't get at least close to the Champions League this season, then he's going to have issues to keep his job, or certainly things might just come to a natural end. So I think based on those factors, based on the fact that they have, for me, the strongest squad, it's time for them just to meet their expectations, essentially.
Let's talk about the three teams that are going to go down. We're going to have to keep this fairly brief. Both of you have gone for two of the same. Rory, I'll let you start. Give us your three for the drop. Just give us the names.
Yes, I had Mallorca, Elche and Valladolid were the ones I went for.
Okay, so Valladolid plus 135, Elche plus 150. Mallorca, the interesting one. Explain why you think Mallorca are going to go down. They look to me to be the value play at plus 225. Give us your thoughts on that one.
Well, I think just based on the very last day of last season, we saw Mallorca stay up.
Nothing like a bit of recency bias, but go on.
We saw them stay up on the last day of the season, in the final moments almost, with Granada failing to win. And Mallorca cut it very fine. And I think they had Javier Aguirre, who's just that veteran Mexican manager. He's very good under pressure. But it's very different to be in a job with eight games to go, to need to save your skin and be able to deal with that pressure better than the other teams. It's a different ball game to have to do all over a season. I think it's very hard to do that if you're as conservative as Aguirre is and you don't have the resources, you don't have a clinical striker. So I think they've not invested particularly well this summer so far. At least they've got Muriqi back, which is a big signing for them. But overall, if I look at every single other team in that sort of bottom half of the table, Valladolid are the only ones that come close to not having the firepower that Mallorca don't have. So, so yeah, I have to say, I think Mallorca, they're just lacking a wee bit for me.
Okay, plus 225 Mallorca. Alan, give us your three names to go down.
Similar to Rory, I've gone for Real Valladolid, Elche, and Rayo Vallecano.
So Rayo, the interesting one, plus 250. They're the biggest price of the selections that we've got here. Tell us why they're going to be playing in the Segunda the following season.
Well, they're a pretty chaotic club. I mean, off the pitch, things have not been going well for them for a long time. And the ownership is not in line with the supporters. They're traditionally very left-wing and very community-oriented. The ownership is much more right-wing. He's invited Vox politicians, the far-right Spanish party, into the stadium at times, prompting quite a furious backlash from the fan base. Also, even from a footballing perspective, things haven't been going that well regarding, you know, players not being paid properly, the women's team being kind of shortchanged in many ways, not getting adequate facilities. Also, I think that the team and the club are not in sync in any way. I mean, Anzanini, Iriola is a very good coach, and he's been overachieving with the players he has at his disposal. And he's not being backed in the way he should be by the ownership. I mean, this summer it seems likely they're going to bring in Diego Costa, the veteran, you know, former Atletico Madrid and Chelsea striker, quite a difficult personality. It seems to be an ownership signing, somebody who's not being exactly, you know, endorsed by the coaching staff, because he's a similar signing to Falcao, who they signed last summer. Radamel Falcao, the former Colombian striker, or the current Colombian striker, let's say. And, you know, both old, big name, injury prone, inconsistent strikers at this stage of their careers, who aren't really in line with the kind of high energy, frenetic, high pressing football that Areola prefers to implement at Ajax. Similarly, I think they could look at last season. They began very, very well, playing some superb football, thrilling all the neutrals in La Liga. But the second half of the season, their form fell off a cliff completely. And they really, towards the end of the year, were very lucky that they had built up such a reserve in the beginning of the season. It's tied them through the leaner months in the second half of the season. So I think that for them to stay up this year, they'd have to maintain something over the course of the year. But I don't think they're going to start as quickly as they did last year. The second season syndrome for teams working them out, for lack of strengthening in the summer window, all that kind of thing. So for that reason, I think that they'll have to perform on a more consistent basis over the course of the 12 months, and they won't be able to. I think that they're going to be sucked into the battle. I think they're going to go down, unfortunately, because they're a really nice club to have in La Liga, very colourful fan base and a very, you know, proud historical institution. So we'll miss them, but I think they're going to do that.
No room for nice guys in the top flight in Spain. Plus 250 Rayo, plus 225 Mallorca. The boys both pick out via the lid. And Elche at plus 135 and plus 150. We are running out of time. We've already talked about Robin Lewandowski. You're both going for him to be top goal scorer. Does that Bundesliga goal scoring form just translate to Spain, or is it because he's going to be playing for Barcelona, taking all the penalties? Alan, is it that simple? Is Lewandowski going to win it comfortably?
And we are seeing a bit of a Bundesliga tax in recent years, and various, you know, players going to different clubs. But I think that if you look at the elite purchases, so, you know, the likes of Erling Haaland and Robert Lewandowski, I think their performances have translated in Europe as well as in the Bundesliga. So I think that we can take their performance and their numbers with less of a pinch of salt as somebody who signed from Mainz or from Borussia Mönchengladbach or from Leipzig even. And so for that reason, yeah, I think he's going to score a lot of goals this year. I don't think he'll hit 40 like he has over the last seven seasons, as I mentioned earlier. But I think that somebody of his stature, somebody with the level of kind of profile that he'll have this season, because he's a new arrival to La Liga, you need to compare the furniture in the Bundesliga, and his numbers will take it for granted because he's playing for a team that has won 10 league titles in a row. I think the challenge of, you know, revitalizing this Barcelona team, firing them to the elite of the elites once again, challenging for honours in Spain and in Europe, I think he'll do really, really well. I think he'll score 30 goals at least. Although I think Karim Benzema, if he can maintain fitness throughout the course of the season, he's a year older than Robert, so it could be more difficult for him. I think that he could definitely give him run for his money, but I think that it's going to be Lewandowski who wins the Pichichi from the end of the year.
Benzema is the other option for bettors, isn't it, Rory? But I know you're in the Lewandowski count, but you can make a case for the Real Madrid, man, can't
you? Yeah, definitely. I think I went for Lewandowski purely on the idea that Barcelona will beat more teams heavily than Real Madrid. But I think if you want to come back to that depth argument, then yeah, okay, Lewandowski will be the star of the show there. But I do think Xavi Hernandez has the balls to take him off and to rest him in certain games. Whereas Karim Benzema is kind of in the Lionel Messi zone now of he plays whenever he's fit almost, and he scores pretty much whenever he's fit almost. So I think Benzema, he will be the absolute linchpin of Real Madrid in a way that Lewandowski might not be. I mean, yeah, I've gone for Lewandowski because that's what I believe. But I do think there's, I don't think it'll be, I don't think it'll be 10, 15 goals behind. I think it'll be 2-3 goals difference.
Okay, some special bets before we wrap up. We've got top assist market, of course, on Bet Rivers. Rory, you've got one for us. Who would you like for top assist? Because it follows on from what you've just been saying.
I actually like Karim Benzema. As I say, he is the linchpin of that side. And I think he was the one that was second to Ousmane Dembele last season in assists. And I think he'll be sort of up there again, to be honest.
Plus 250 if you're backing Benzema. And Alan, you do like the favourite for this market. You like Dembele, who was a winner with just 13 last month. I thought it'd be more than that, but obviously we got used to Messi getting 20-odd a season or whatever it was. But you like Dembele for this market.
But the reason he got 13 was because he played half the season. I mean, the first half of the year, he wasn't being used. It was a contract standoff. He wasn't fit. But once Xavi came in, took over from Ronald Koeman, once the contract issues were kind of put to one side, Xavi said, okay, I don't care if this guy is leaving in the summer for free to go to Chelsea or the PSG or whoever. While I have him, I'm going to use him. He's a part of my team. I think Dembele really appreciated that. And for that reason, he performed really, really well. And the second half of last season, the form he displayed was one of the best in European football. Like, this is a guy who we know he's got serious talent to burn. As I mentioned earlier, I think he's more talented than Rafinha. I don't think he's the same mentality as Rafinha, but I think that having Rafinha there, challenging him for that starting spot on the right wing, is only going to bring the best out of him because, you know, for the first time since he joined Barcelona, he's a clear competitor. But he also has responsibilities, the seniority that, you know, his status and his self-perception of a status, which we know now, or at least his agent's perception, isn't in line with the market's perception because he didn't get the offers he thought he would get. So the challenge has been laid down on him this season to go and perform, to prove that he can do what he's capable of doing. And I think that the players he has at his disposal, whether it's, you know, Rafinha playing on the left sometimes, or Ansu Fati playing on the left, or Lewandowski and Aubameyang running through the middle, or even the likes of, you know, Gavi and Pedri breaking from the field, and Frank Kessie as well. You know, there's a whole host of targets for him. And I think that he'll have a very fun time, as Rory said, when they're beating teams heavily, to be teeing up people left, right, and center. So for that reason,
okay. One last bet that we've got to get in. Rory emailed me with this. He says, yeah, I don't know about this one. It's very short odds. Never mind short odds. Short odds can be value. And Rory, you also said it's easy money. Well, look, we all like easy money. That's why we're doing this job, even if we have been Frankie de Jong this season. Anyway, tell us the bet that you like here. Very quick.
João Félix, -112 to score over 8.5 goals. I think that it's not something we touched on earlier, but this is the season for João Félix. He looks sharper than ever. I think he passed that mark last season and he was sort of in and out of the team. He wasn't that fit. This season, he'll be starting every game. I think he's got a bit more of an edge about him. So João Félix, over 8.5 goals. Yeah, it seems obvious to me, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll take this. We'll take the short prices. Don't mind that at all. That's -112 if you think that João Félix is going to go 9 or more in La Liga, one that Rory's put up there. That wraps it up. We need social media details, as per usual, to get your followers up because you haven't got too many. Well, much more than me. Alan, where can we find you?
At Azulfili.
And at Rory Barlow. And at Football Spain, you'll find both our work.
Wonderful. That wraps up the Bet Rivers La Liga's Futures podcast. We're back later this week, of course, for a rundown of the best bets from week one of the new season. And make sure you're across all of the Bet Rivers podcasts at Because We Win. We'll speak later this week.
Thanks for listening to Betting Weekly La Liga on the Bet Rivers Network.